Hello and welcome to Center for Victory's podcast of your best day yet. I'm Eric Guy, Chief Victory Officer here at the Center for Victory, where we're here to unlock, reinforce, and enrich relationships through personal and professional development. Sit back and listen to a previously reported podcast of your best day yet, backed by popular demand. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome to Center for Victory's podcast of your best day yet. Here at Center for Victory, we're here to help unlock, reinforce, and enrich relationships through personal and professional development. I am Eric Guy, the Chief Victory Officer here at the Center for Victory. With me today is a very good and dear friend, John Cole, former Pittsburgh Steeler, university professor, husband, father, and founder of Adventures in Training with a Purpose, or what we refer to today as ATP. What they do is they help those most in need to improve their quality of life through an adventure of purposeful physical training. Great to have you here today, John. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate what you're going to lay down for us today. As you know, as our audience knows, we started May with Get Your Mind Right. So our whole theme is Get Your Mind Right, going along with Mental Health Awareness Month. And I think what you're going to give us today is going to be very uplifting to the audience, for those listening and watching. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited, Eric. One of the reasons I'm excited, I got to do a couple things with you. Did some programs, and that was fun. But shortly after we met, you know, you gave me a copy of your book, and you know, I read through the book, I think, three times. I read through a book once and I mark it up, you know, and then I go through and I like to go through. Your book has tons of marks in it. I mean, your book is really marked up. So I really enjoyed it. It was really something that I could draw on. So I've been looking forward to you inviting me to be here.
Yeah, all right. Well, you know, what's unique about at least the conversations I have with you, and I was telling somebody about this yesterday, is every time I talk to you, John, I want to have a notepad down to me. Okay. I take notes. It's always like, okay, there was a nugget there I want to go back to. And it's always like that. I mean, I have like these little notepads. Just every time I talk with you in front of me, I was like, how many do I actually have? I've got to compile them all together. But one of the things that struck me that you said a while back that I wrote down is you said that we don't need more competition. We need more challenges. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I'm really blessed. You know, like you and I talk about what we've done together. I still have my teammates. You talked about the Steelers, JT Thomas, Donnie Schell, Larry Brown. There's a bunch of the guys that we're still in contact with. And when we get together, it's to me, it's pretty interesting because nobody ever says, hey, I remember the third Super Bowl, and it was the wind was from the south southwest. There were 45,000 people. There were, you know, we don't talk about that. We just don't talk about it. But JT's a guy that, and I don't want to get off the topic, it's a question you asked. But he was the first black player to go to Florida State University. JT has a scar right here that happened because he couldn't read the sign for whites only when he was 4 years old. So that's kind of his background. And he sends out, every once a week, a little Bible verse with a little talk about it. And so we were talking one day, and he said that. He just said that to me, just like you were talking about. We don't need more challenge. We need more competition. We need more challenge. And my first thought was for myself. And one of the things you talk about in your book was your early football career and that kind of stuff. Mine didn't work out as well. I was always getting cut. I found out in the fifth grade running track, I could run fast, but I wasn't big enough to run fast into somebody. And so I got cut all the time. And in the ninth grade, I was still only 120 pounds. With my dad being 5'7", it didn't look like that was going to expand too much. And so getting cut, the competition kind of thing, I guess that's where I'm trying to go with that. that it was really discouraging because, you know, you get cut and what are they telling you? You are not any good. You're not any good. And I remember, and I'm not trying to make this, my wife watched these TV shows. It seemed like if you can sing, you had polio when you were a child, because everybody that sings on these shows, they had all this terrible childhood. But mine wasn't terrible. It's just that I would climb up the back of the stadium to watch my friends play on Saturday night because I got cut from the football team. But I kept working out and kept trying and kept competing. And that's what JT's talking about. And if you take the word challenge, C-H-A, and then it goes L-L-E-N-G-E. And if we use our mountain and go C-H-A, and then keep up with the L-L-E-N-G, but coming back down on the other side, if you go N-G-E, you have change. So what JT's point was is that challenge brings about change. And that just really impacted me. And I don't know, I guess that's the way God made me. I can think about something like that for a couple of days straight and then say, well, how do I use that tool? It's a good tool. How do I use that for myself first? And then how can I use that with perhaps people that I'm working with? I guess I would pull it together by saying, if we don't challenge ourselves, what happens? And we can go through scripture. Jesus was always telling the disciples to go do something, and that was, there was always a bit of a challenge there. So I think that that's part of our nonprofit, the challenge part. Yeah.
And that really drives change. I've seen some incredible things that you all have done. And you've also said what makes us move also makes us think. So that's the challenge of getting people, especially nowadays with all this COVID stuff, people are locked in. We can't do a lot. But we need to get out. We need to move. We're meant to move, right?
Well, Acts 17:28. I don't know if you can see back behind me, but it says, "In Him we live, we move, and we have our being." I think there's a lot of sandwiches in the Bible. That's one of them. Okay, so a sandwich has two pieces of bread. Okay, so live is one piece of bread. Have your being or exist. That's your other piece of bread. The meat in the middle, the protein, is move. And I don't like sandwiches with two pieces of bread. That's just not a sandwich. You got to have the meat in the middle. So in Him, we live, we move, and we have our being. I think also, going back to what makes us move is what also makes us think. I don't want to belabor this, but doing football camps, and you talk about in your book, playing sports. But I still am invited to do a football camp. And over the years, I've found that sometimes I never get to the football drills that I want to teach because we can't get through the warm-up. And so many kids, for example, if you come to my football camp, we're going to skip as part of the warm-up. If you go to a Steeler game and you're out there 2 hours before the game, you will see players. And they will be out on the field on their own, and they'll do various types of skipping, forward, sideways, backwards. And you know what? We got a lot of kids today that can't skip. And it turns out in that article that you were talking about, what makes us move, what also makes us think. The lady, her name was Jean Blades Manigan. She's a physical therapist that wrote that article. It turns out that the same kids can't skip. They can't spell cat. And so, and we could go into all the reasons for the right side of the brain, left side of the brain, the corpus callosum, but they can't spell cat. And so what she talks about in that article is if we teach kids to skip, the grades get better. And she said, we don't need more flashcards. We need more activity. We need more movement. And then so when, as I sit down, I kind of think about that. Well, that was discovered years ago because in Deuteronomy 6, Hear, O Israel, the Lord God is one. Love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. So, and then I mentioned 1 Thessalonians, and in Mark and Luke, Matthew, all three of those, it talks about loving the Lord with all your strength. It ties together all your strength, all your mind, all your soul, all your spirit. It doesn't say just one.
Right.
And so I think that's not an accident. And so when we try to, I believe that the application for this is if we try to just isolate ourselves in one phase, we start to die. You know, the meat in the middle is the moon. And I see that come to pass in a really sad way. We have right now, at this current time, we have six people, well, before the virus, that are paralyzed. And you see this with every one of these people. And we've had much more, many more than that. We have six that we're continually working in. When we can get them to buy into that concept, then and start moving, and that's another talk, I guess. How do we take paralyzed guys start moving? Jesus could just walk up and say, "Move." I can't do that, but there's a way that we get them moving. And when we get them moving again, then the mind and the spirit and the soul and all that, it starts to come back again. I guess the last thing I would say, I'm taking up all your time, but the last thing I would say to that is when Jesus met people, he didn't say, "Are you washed in the blood? Have you been sanctified? Are you consecrated?" He didn't use those logical words. You know, he touched people physically. He did the physical thing first. So that's kind of what the challenge for us is.
Yeah. And it's, you know, so much, you know, we're talking about Mental Health Month this month in May, and how much that can impact a child.
Yeah.
When you build, when you start building that confidence in them, I mean, now they're moving, now they're learning. But what that does to their self-esteem and their mental health is amazing, right? I mean, you've seen it. I've seen it.
Well, I'll go back to your book, because you talked about playing sport. I know if you played football, and you did more than one game, you probably come out of that game and there's some flat noses, you know, there's some scars on your chin. There, you know, there's some fingers that don't point where you're supposed to point. Ribs that are still okay. My shoulder makes noise. All of those things I can live with. It's not a problem. You know, a lot of our people say, "Oh, I got bone on bone." You know, when you get to be 60 years old, you got to learn the phrase, "I'm bone on bone," because that's like your badge, bone on bone. If you can be bone on bone, man, that qualifies you for any, you know, you get a wheelchair parking pass, you can park in the front row, you can do all this stuff, bone on bone. Okay, if you want to do that, but, you know, and they sell their house because they don't want to climb stairs. But as soon as you do that, you start to die. Albert Schweitzer said the tragedy of life is what dies inside of a man while he's still living, or a woman. And dead men walking, we see that. We see that in people. What the tragedy of life is what dies inside of them. And it's really, when it's children, it's just heartbreaking. And what I started to say, Eric, was I can do with the broken fingers that turn ways they're not supposed to turn, or the flat noses. I can do that. But I think it's interesting. The first time God speaks in the Bible, he says, "Let there be light." And then the next thing that happens is he separates the light from the darkness. And then in the New Testament, it says the light has come into the world, speaking of Jesus, but men love the darkness. And I think, and one of my heroes in the Bible, he had a light at night, Elijah, 450 prophets of Baal. And they wanted, he said, "Okay, light up your altar." They couldn't light it up. They cut themselves, couldn't light it up. He makes his altar, and he puts water on it, some coffee and all that. It steps back, God lights it up. You know, so I can do with the broken noses and the ribs and fingers, but darkness I can't deal with. And after Elijah had that light at night and killed those 450 prophets of Baal, he ticked Jezebel off and he went and hid in a cave. And God should have said, God made this mistake. He said, "Elijah," he should have said, "Man, I really feel bad. You've been out there, you've been working and you're overtime and you're not getting paid and all this stuff." But Elijah goes, our God says, Troy, what are you doing in this cave? In fact, you ask him twice, what are you doing in the cave? You know, and if you go to Israel, there's caves all over the place. Yeah. I don't know which one he was in, but there's caves all over the place. And Eric, I'd like to say I never go in the cave, but I do. And maybe that's my best, I do have some initials behind my name, not as many as a lot of people, but I just go and got a couple initials behind my name. I think the learning that I know is when I see people that are living in apartments in the cave, that hurts me, because I know, if I'm in the cave, I got to get out of there now, because that's part of death. So, I'm sorry, you're asking me 15-second questions.
No, but that it leads right to our question that one thing that I did want to end with, when I called you, I said, hey, can you talk about this? Because it really made an impact for me when I heard it. And I've just been thinking about it all the time lately. And this has been, before this hit, you and I were in an event together. And while you were speaking, I just wrote this down across my paper, which is embrace the rocks. So you're in that cave, embracing the rocks. What would you tell somebody to get their mind right? What do you mean by that, and how do we do it?
Yeah, well, I have three sons. I've been blessed with three sons, and my middle, all three wrestled. That was their sport. My middle, Tanner, is a strength coach at WVU, and since he's in West Virginia University, there's all kinds of rocks, and there's rivers, whitewater rafting, and he goes whitewater kayaking, and he started training blind people a couple years ago. Now think about it, you're blind, and you're going down, he was training them to go down the Colorado River, and you can't see the rocks. And he was talking about this one guy that he hits the rock and he flips upside down. When you're upside down, you're dark, you can't breathe, you're banging your head on the rocks, and it's very scary. And so, but he said, this guy's got a natural flip up. And that right there, a natural flip up, just spoke to me, because a lot of the people that you work with, a lot of the people that I work with, they've lost their flip up. And so very simply, what's our job? Help them get their flip up back.
Yes.
And ironically, it's counterintuitive that when you come to a rock, if you lean away from it, that's the thing you want to do. Then what happens is the water is coming towards you. It will push your kayak down and it'll flip you upside down. And there you are, you're banging upside down. And actually you can die because you get pushed up against the rock and drown. On the other hand, if you lean into the rock, if you embrace the rock, now then the water comes and it lifts your kayak up and it moves you around the rock. And so I think God says the same thing, Romans 5:2, not only this, but we also exalt in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about proven character, and proven character hope, and hope isn't this point. So he says that there. James starts out, consider it all joy, brethren, when you encounter various rocks. So, God doesn't promise. I misunderstood as a kid. I thought if I held up my hand with every head bowed and every eye closed, God was going to take the rocks away. Because I think that's sometimes how we sell Jesus.
Yeah.
You slip up your hand and God's taking the rocks away. No, that's not what I read. He teaches us to embrace the rocks and navigate through the rocks, and the purpose is so that we can bring others. That's his design. That's his design. And the time talking with my friends like you, I think, yeah, man, that's really cool. But then when it's dark, sometimes I wish we hadn't done it that way. I can go back and forth myself.
Yeah, I mean, that's just for anybody watching, that just inspires me. Even when I hear that now, I kind of get chills. Just embrace your rocks, because that's, life has changed for us, everyone. I mean, our business really completely shut down, right? What are we going to do about it? I mean, we can either go away from it and drown, in your analogy, or we can lean into it, embrace it, and come out and allow that to be this whole situation to be a mentor to us and say, hey, look, I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to move through it. We're going to learn, and we're going to be better, and we're going to be further down the river.
Yeah. And when I go, I have to relearn it, because every time I get in that kayak, I like rock climbing. I like that space. I like the height. I'm comfortable there. It's not, I would say comfortable, but being upside down in the river, I'm not. And I'm going down that river. And a couple things. I don't know how much time we have left, but Isaiah 43 says, I have redeemed you. I've called you by name. You're mine. And when you pass through the waters, I will wish you in the rivers. They will not overflow you. And when I'm going down that river, now I got that one memorized.
Well, I think we can just end on that highlight. That was really good. But thanks for being on here. I hope we can get you back on, because it's always inspiring to me. And I know, just sharing this with other people, hopefully it's inspiring to other people as well. But folks, that's all for today. Really appreciate you watching and listening.